Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another exceptional episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with PJ Powers. Yes, that's right, the artistic director of Timeline Theater Company. You know, that little infamous theater company up in Chicago? Well, don't forget to check out Tom Williams' interview with PJ Powers. Also, Tom will be giving us two more audio reviews for your listening pleasure. And of course, as always, I will be bringing you the theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I am your host, Dustin Mote, bringing you the theater news for the week of May 15th, 2006. Goodman Theater Artistic Director Robert Falls, who is now celebrating his 30th season, has announced the addition of Mirror of the Invisible World. A critical and popular success, originally produced in the Goodman Studio back in 1997. This was a part of his 20th anniversary season. The play will be adapted and directed by Goodman Manilow resident director and Tony Award winner, Mary Zimmerman. The highly acclaimed Mirror of the Invisible World will take place in the now reimagined Albert Theater from June 16th to July 22nd. Don't miss it. Whenever you get a chance, you need to hop on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. There you will find an exclusive article about Ina Marlowe of the Library Theater. Ina Marlowe was the former artistic director of the Organic and Touchstone Theaters, but now has a new venue to call home. Joe Stead from Stead Style Chicago wrote a wonderful article about Ina Marlowe. That is an exclusive for Talk Theater in Chicago. Hop on over to the Theater News section and check it out. The House Theater of Chicago has announced their 2006-2007 season. Coming up this September for the House Theater will be Hatfield and McCoy by Sean Fouch, about the classic family feud. Also, the House's own Nathan Allen will present his The Sparrow coming in January. And then closing up will be Hope Springs Infernal by Ben Lopriess. That will be coming in May. Do not miss these. Well, it seems like the Old Globe Theater of San Diego has picked up a couple of Chicago faves for its 2006-2007 season. Hershey Felder will be bringing his George Gershwin Alone to a part of the Old Globe Theater season. Also, neo-futurist Greg Kotis will be bringing his new work Pig Farm, which will be starring Chicago actor Dennis O'Hare. Thank you, San Diego. We are honored. The Theater on the Lake has announced the 9 plays that will be making up its season this summer. The Outdoorsy Theater, which is a part of the Chicago Park District and located actually on the lake, will be bringing 9 productions from June until August. And those productions will be The Secret Garden from June 14th through June 18th, Porchlight Music Theater's take on the classic children's book. Then The Glass Menagerie will be from June 21st through June 25th, and yes, Sheldon Patinkin will be directing that. Then from June 28th through July 2nd will be No Danger of the Spiritual Thing, short works of Samuel Beckett, all by the Curious Theater branch. Then World Saved, 5 years of That's Weird, Grandma, will be running from July 5th through 9th, another Barrel of Monkeys productions. Following that will be Crumble, Lay Me Down, Justin Timberlake. That runs from July 12th through July 16th, and it's a dysfunctional tale by the Dog and Pony Theater. After that will be Kurt Columbus's infamous translation of Chekhov's Three Sisters, running from July 19th through July 23rd. And then Daredevils will be running from July 26th through July 30th. Another neo-futurist stunt show. Do not miss that one. And then following that will be Blaxploitation, The Remix, Impact's original sketch comedy. And then closing out the Theater on the Lake season will be Songs of the Second City, some of Second City's finer musical moments. This is going to be a stellar season, ladies and gentlemen. Do not miss it. And Talk Theater in Chicago would like to congratulate the recipients of the League of Chicago Theaters honors that are going to be presented on May 22nd at the Drury Lane Theater at the Water Tower Place. Those receiving honors will be the famous art philanthropist Richard H. Driehaus. He will be receiving the Tribute Award. Also, Martha Levy, the artistic director of the Steppenwolf Theater, will be getting the Artistic Leadership Award from the League of Chicago Theaters, a very, very prestigious award. Also, the resident director of the Goodman Theater, Chuck Smith, will be receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award. Congratulations to everyone receiving the honor. Chicago Theater can't thank you enough. You truly deserve it. Well, thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, we have a new podcast ready for your ears every Monday. Remember, you can always find out more information about Chicago Theater's news at TalkTheaterInChicago.com's Theater News section. Until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here's my review of Fiorillo. Fiorillo, directed by Nick Bowling at Timeline Theater. Spunky, tuneful Fiorillo is a smash hit. When you are the number one non-equity theater company in Chicago specializing in historical drama, why bother trying to do musicals? Not so for the visionary Timeline Theater Company. Under Nick Bowling's leadership, Fiorillo adds to the luster of Timeline's reputation as a marvelous theater troupe by mounting an exquisite production of an almost forgotten Broadway musical, Fiorillo. In one of the season's finest productions, P.J. Powers boldly delivers a tour de force performance as the feisty, hyper-populist politician who reformed New York City as mayor during the 1930s. Mayor Fiorillo H. LaGuardia was an Italian-Jewish Episcopalian lawyer, totally honest and incorruptible, who first dealt a blow to the Democratic Tammany Hall political establishment by winning an upset victory from a congressional seat in New York City in 1916. This character sketch introduces audiences to a big city mayor reformer in the making with a tremendous script. The rousing Broadway musical was penned by veteran playwrights George Abbott and Jerome Weidman, with music and lyrics by Jerry Bock and Sheldon Harnick, who also did, among other shows, Fiddler on the Roof and She Loves Me. In 1960, Fiorillo won the Pulitzer Prize and the Tony Award for Best Musical in a tie with The Sound of Music. They both beat Gypsy that year. Fiorillo played the 798 performances on Broadway in 1960. Amazingly, Fiorillo has been absent from a major remount either on Broadway or here in Chicago. Life has its mysteries. Me and my friend Joe Stead have been trying to drum up interest in this gem for several years. Timeline Theater's production was almost overwhelming. Fiorillo is a classically structured Broadway musical featuring heartbreaking ballads, cute patter songs, clever chorus showstoppers featuring rich harmonies throughout. The story of one little but manic man, bent on reforming the Big Apple against the corrupted big city bosses, is told with powerful emotions and nice bits of satirical humor. Doug Beck's terrific musical arrangements sound excellent and allow the singers to belt out without the use of amplification. It is so great to hear singers who can project and don't need microphones. Kevin Hagen's impressive multi-layered ladder set aptly allows enough space for the several locations necessary to produce Fiorello. Smart blocking by Nick Bowling enables the strong voices to effectively land their numbers. From the opening on the side of the angels, we meet the characters. Instantly, we become engaged. The funny harmonies from the Republican politicians are splendidly sung in the tuneful Politics and Poker ditty that may have you humming it long after the show. I must add that Fiorillo definitely has what we call take-home songs in it. There'll be one or two songs that you leave the theater humming to yourself. That's a testimony to excellent writing. The rousing marching anthem, the name's LaGuardia, is infectious, whilst the sentimental serenade, Till Tomorrow, captures the mood of soldiers leaving for the Great War. The women land several powerful ballads. I Love a Cop allows Maris Hudson to demonstrate her vocal chops. Rebecca Finnegan nails Maria's Law and The Very Next Man, while Casey Woolley emotionally delivers Till Tomorrow and When Did I Fall in Love. Bethany Thomas richly belts the bluesy, sensuous Gentleman Jim song. The women sound great in this show. Terry Hamilton, Brendan Kelly, Chuck Sesson, Jonathan Hickerson, and Dan Loftus are the politicians who produce fine harmonies and some very cute, clever bits in the two show-stopping numbers, Politics and Poker, and in Act Two, The Little Tin Cup. These songs are terrific. Add great work from Sean Sullivan, Alan Schmucker, Michael Kensington, and Aaron Graham, and Fiorillo boasts stellar singing and worthy acting. Ultimately, Fiorello is PJ Powers' show. Powers proves that charisma, energy, commanding presence, and a complete understanding of the character are essential to his success. Powers is immensely empathetic as the self-confident reformer. He exudes spirit, enthusiasm, and genuine heart in one of the strongest performances of the year. Powers captures the essence of LaGuardia, especially in the emotionally wrenching reprise of the name's LaGuardia in Act Two. I might add that 82-year-old lyricist Sheldon Harnick worked with P.J. Powers to revamp this reprise number because he never felt it really worked real well in the original production. But Powers really lands it with rich emotion. This is an excellent moment. Timeline Theater Company has set the bar quite high with this polished, flawless production, proving again why they are one of Chicago's finest theater troupes. Trust me on this one. See this neglected masterpiece. My rating for this show, not to be missed. It is Fiorillo at Timeline Theater, 615 West Wellington in Chicago. Tickets are amazingly cheap, the bargain price for $25 a ticket. The schedule for Fiorillo at Timeline Theater is Thursday and Fridays at 8 p.m., Saturdays at 4 and 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. The running time is 2 hours and 40 minutes with one intermission. It runs through June 18th. For more information, call 773-281-8463. That's 773-281-8463. Thank you, and go see a play this week. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of The Clean House at the Goodman Theater. The Clean House by Sarah Rule, directed by Jessica Thebus. Uniquely compelling work awaits at the Goodman Theater. Chicago playwright Sarah Rule's The Clean House is a refreshingly original hybrid that is part comedy of matters, part surrealistic fantasy, part domestic relationship, and part a look at the effects of humor on the psyche, especially in relationship to death. It uses the metaphor of cleaning one's house to define the personality of the four women. In a clever, often hilarious production at the Goodman Theater's main stage, The Clean House unfolds as a fable-like treatment of modern American culture, where our frantic lives leave no time for domestic chores such as cleaning one's house. It pokes fun at the guilt we all have when dust and dirt invade our homes, forcing us to clean before the cleaning lady arrives. Director Jessica Thebes mounts a fast-paced show that promises much and delivers enough to make its ambitious premise work to create one of the most visionary comedy dramas in many years. Todd Rosenthal's ultra-modern white suburban house set with large skylight suggests a sterile environment. A successful woman doctor, Lane, played by Mary Beth Fisher, in a terrific, realistic performance. This set would be the kind of house she would enjoy. She will not clean and hires Matilda, played with zest by Gwenoa Lemos, to do the cleaning. Matilda is Brazilian and finds cleaning so depressing that it distracts her from finding the perfect joke, her goal in life. Virginia, played by Christine Estabrook, Lane's excessive compulsive sister, defines her self-worth in terms of the amount of dust she can clean. She and Matilda form a pact that allows Virginia to secretly clean Lane's house while Matilda searches her mind for the perfect joke. This neat premise uses clever monologues and smart exchanges to land both humor and the setups necessary for the play. Matilda early delivers a joke in Brazilian Portuguese that garners many laughs, even though few could understand its meaning. When Lane's surgeon husband, Charles, played by Patrick Clear, introduces his newly found soulmate, Anna, Marilyn Dodds Frank, in a tremendous performance. Lane's ordered life becomes chaotic when she meets her husband's new soulmate. Anna is a 60-something breast cancer patient of Charles who desires a man before she can succumb to the cancer. Anna could be a mythological figure sent to connect and fulfill each character's needs. That's very possible. She adds clarity as she connects to the desires of each character. She gives Charles nurturing and sexual fantasies, reminds Matilda of her departed mother. Virginia finds her purpose in nursing Anna, and Lane overcomes her jealousy as her compassion allows her to help a needy patient. Rule's script nicely moves from absurdity to realism to fantasy seamlessly to produce genuine laughter while offering a hopeful look at how humor can possibly heal sicknesses both of the body and the soul. You'd be hard-pressed to witness a finer acted show that balances the poignant moments with the wacky one. Gwenoa Lemos' Matilda and Mary Beth Fisher's Lane are especially excellent here. When you see The Clean House, you'll witness a talented, inventive new voice in playwright Sarah Rule. My rating for this show? Highly recommended. It is at the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn in Chicago. Tickets range from $20 to $65. The running time is 2 hours, 10 minutes with intermission. It runs through June 4th. For more information, call 312-443-3800. That's 312-443-3800. And remember, go see a play this week. Thank you. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. The interview for this week is with PJ Powers, who is the artistic director, company member, and one of the founders of Timeline Theater Company. Timeline Theater Company is considered by many people in Chicago to be the number one or the finest non-equity theater troupe, and I agree. It is number one on my list of the 15 best. Since their first show in 1998, over the next 5 years, they have won a total staggering amount of 31 Jeff citations. The mission of Timeline Theater is around history. They do plays that shed a new perspective on moments, places, and forces that define history. We are excited to have PJ Powers because Timeline has moved into a new arena. They are producing their first full-blown musical, Fiorello. Hello, PJ.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for chatting today.
Well, congratulations on the opening of Fiorello, PJ.
Thanks so much. It was a good weekend.
Well, I must say, it is so rare that I was at another theater, because I know you're spreading it around because of the size of your theater. And I had several really tough veteran critics come up to me and say, wow, how great Fiorillo was and how great you were in the show.
Wow. Well, thank you. From your lips to their newspapers, I hope.
Yeah. Well, that's what I told one of my – I hope it comes out in print that way. And this lady was just going crazy loving the show.
Well, that's great.
But now you got to tell us, why this show at this time?
Well, you know, to be perfectly honest, I had never heard of this show till about 2 years ago. And I was sitting backstage. I was doing Our Town up at Writers Theater a couple years ago, sitting backstage and flipping through. Someone had brought in like a coffee table book of Pulitzer Prize winning plays. And I'm just flipping through it. And I got to 1960, and the page said Fiorello. And I was sitting there with Chicago actor Joel Hatch. And I said, what the hell is Fiorello? And he said, oh, it's the greatest show. You know, it's all character actors. I've been, you know, dying to do this show. He said, you should really look at it. So then I mentioned it to Nick Bowling, who's our director. And he had heard a little bit about it, but he started doing more research and got a hold of the script and listened to the music and just went nuts for it. And then he started doing all this research about Fiorello LaGuardia and read his biography and just went nuts for it and then really started pushing me, saying, we have to do the show, we have to do this show. So we were first intrigued because it's a play, it's only one of seven musicals to ever win the Pulitzer. It won the Tony. It tied Sound of Music and beat Gypsy for the Tony in 1960. So we were intrigued that here was this great musical that no one knew about. But then more than that, once we started to find out more about the life of Fiorello LaGuardia, who I think most people know just by the airport, we started to realize that this guy is a true political hero that most people, unless maybe you're a native New Yorker or a political history buff, know almost nothing about. And he should be ranked up there with, you know, FDR as one of the, you know, he took over New York during the Depression when one out of three workers were out of work. New York could not have been in worse shape. And this guy served three terms as mayor and really revolutionized New York and built it into the metropolis that it is today. And before he was mayor, actually, he was a U.S. congressman, and resigned his seat to enlist in World War I.
Wow.
Like, find me a congressman today who is going to –
find me any congressman in any war.
Exactly.
Wow, that is – I didn't know that.
And then this is a guy who, when he became mayor, he – cut his salary in half. I mean, he was a true man of the people and fought for the little guy. You know, he was a Jewish-Italian immigrant, 5'2", fat, ugly, with this funny, squeaky voice. He was the ultimate outsider. You know, he was but he really reached out to immigrants and fought for the little guys. And New York was as corrupt as could be at the time, and he wanted none of it. He had so many opportunities to, you know, take, you know,
so as a musical, it fits into Timeline's your mission of doing these plays based on historical figures and historical places,
right?
And events.
Absolutely, and trying to bring to light aspects of history that perhaps people don't know much about, and also aspects of history that resonate today. You know, sadly, there are some ways that it doesn't resonate today because I don't think there are politicians like LaGuardia today. Unfortunately, I think we're, you know, living in a world of seeing politicians that were the type that LaGuardia fought against, the corrupt Tammany folks. God, if only there were a Fiorello LaGuardia that could come on the landscape today.
But you got to talk about the pedigree of the writers of this show. A lot of people, these are the guys that did Fiddler.
Yeah, absolutely. The music and lyrics team is Jerry Bach and Sheldon Harnick, who wrote Fiddler on the Roof and She Loves Me, many other great shows. George Abbott, one of the most legendary directors ever on Broadway, directed it. You know, he lived to 107, and I don't know how many dozens of shows he
– I think that I heard that he was involved one way or another with more shows than any three people in the history of New York theater.
I'd believe it. I mean,
his 75-year career. I mean, that's amazing.
His bio is unbelievable. And then the book was written by Jerome Wideman, who also has written countless. So it's this unbelievable team. It wins the Pulitzer, wins the Tony, and for some reason, it's not done anymore. Beat Gypsy for the Tony and Tied Sound of Music, and those two musicals are obviously done every
that
five
might have
minutes.
Been what contributed to it. It might have been just one show too many in a year of great shows.
It's possible.
That's yeah. happened on Broadway before.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things, the score is so funny. There are some great numbers in it. I mean, it's serious, but it's a light Broadway musical.
Yeah, yeah, and it really shows off, I think, the great music talents of Jerry Bock and Sheldon Harnick. Sheldon, who is 82 years old now, was in town, actually did an event with us. He's going to be coming back to see the actual production. He came in just a week before we opened, but he's been extremely involved and amazing to have this Broadway legend.
He's coming in to see it, huh?
Yes, yeah, he's been
That's
very
not
excited.
Too much pressure, is it?
No, no, just a little bit. I mean, he's tweaked some things in the show for us to help us, you know, pare it down to fit our space. You know, it was originally done with a cast of 30 plus and probably an orchestra of 20, and we're doing it with 16 actors and a four-piece band. So he's helped us pare things down.
Yeah.
And he even wrote something new for Act Two. There is a reprise of a song, the song The Name's LaGuardia, that he told me about a month ago that he never thought that this moment in the show worked, and he and Jerry Bock were always sort of troubled by this moment. It's after LaGuardia first loses the mayoral election, and he never thought the moment worked, so he asked if I wouldn't mind trying a new song if he would send it to us. And, you know, I'm not going to say no to Sheldon
Arnold. No, people you just say yes to, and he's one of them.
And so he sent us this song, and I have to say it's now probably my favorite scene in the show, and I think without it, we'd really miss an important window into
the
party.
So this is and Act Two right after he loses the election.
Correct.
Okay, I'll be
correct.
But I saw the show in 1960 with Tom Bosley.
Yeah.
And did you listen to the soundtrack, or how do you prepare now? You're a top character and serious dramatic actor, and to do a musical and to have the lead. You got to tell us about
it's
that
ridiculous.
Process.
To be honest, it's a little ridiculous. I haven't done a musical in 16 years, and to be honest, I never thought I would do one again. My viewpoint was I wouldn't pay to see me in a musical, so I don't expect other people to either. And Nick Bowling, our director, first talked to me about playing the role probably a little over a year ago, and I said, no, I think that's a stupid idea. And he said, no, you're the one I want. And he kept sort of badgering me about it, and I said, no, I'm going to bring in some guys, and I'll prove to you that there's someone better out there, more suited to it. And we auditioned, a number of guys, and he kept saying, no, they're missing this one quality that I want, that I see in you. And I said, but the one quality that I don't think I have is any musical ability. But as Tom Bosley proved, this character is more about selling than singing. He has a couple numbers, but so I did listen to the soundtrack early on before I ever thought that I was going to be in the show. But then once I finally gave in and told Nick, okay, yes, I'll play the part, I stopped listening to it because I didn't want to be doing an impersonation of Tom Bosley, who's doing an impersonation
that makes sense.
Of LaGuardia.
How scared were you when you did that? I mean, that's you know, if you're reluctant to...
There aren't words to convey the amount of fear.
How do you feel now after the opening?
I feel pretty great. Yeah. I feel really great. I'm having the time of my life. I'm really having a blast.
Well, and everyone tells me it really comes through that you're really carrying the show. And you got a heck of a cast. Tell us about some of the people
you have. I just try and stay out of their way. It is an unbelievable cast. I mean, really some of the top musical theater people in town, Rebecca Finnegan and Kathy Woolley and Bethany Thomas and Terry Hamilton and Brendan Kelly. The list goes on and on and on. It's a top-notch cast.
I tell you that there are
the women in this show. Bring your earplugs, because they all have voices that blow the roof off the place.
Well,
just blow the roof.
And
off.
Are they mic'd?
They are not. No,
I love that.
No one is mic'd. The band isn't mic'd. It is a...
You have good acoustics.
Well, we weren't sure until we got the full cast in here and the full band in how it was going to blend. And we were thrilled when we first heard just how live the sound is and the room. It just bounces off the wall, so it's really great.
And you have a top musical director,
Doug Peck. I tell you, this guy is a young phenom. He is so, so smart, knows absolutely how to talk to actors, how to work with the director. The partnership that he and Nick have had has been incredible. I've been in awe.
Well, he's been hired all over town, and I have yet to see him do any. I mean, he's worked at Core, he's worked at Apple Tree, everywhere.
And Marriott. Yeah. He's working all over the place. He has a bright, bright future. We're thrilled to have him here.
Well, folks, for those of you who maybe haven't seen a Timeline production, it's probably some of you that may not have discovered this group. But when I heard you guys were doing this show, I said, well, first of all, I'll bet on them, because if your quality is top-notch and you move into a new genre, they're not going to touch it unless it's top-notch. And then when you bring Nick Bowling in, who's one of the best directors in town.
Yeah.
Well, and then when I saw the cast list, and I know the score, so I said, wow.
Yeah, I mean, all credit really needs to go to Nick, not only for pushing us to do this, when, to be honest, a lot of us here at Timeline were a little nervous about it.
Well, sure, because it could blow up in your face.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But Nick really had the right vision for the show. And a lot of people don't know that his background is all in musical theater. He's built a reputation the past 10 years in Chicago for doing dramas and classics and new plays, and really hasn't had a chance to show his skills directing musicals. He did Closer Than Ever at Porchlight last year, but that's his he got his undergrad degree in musical theater, and is a great choreographer, and so he's really sort of getting back to his roots with this show.
Well, you guys were hinting when you did the that concert reading of Cradle Will Rock.
Yeah.
And boy, did you surprise us with some of the voices of some of our, some of your ensemble members.
I know people like David Parks and Elizabeth Rich.
I didn't know who knew.
Too. I thought, God, I didn't know they could sing.
Yeah. Well, so I think you guys have cut new ground here.
Well, it's been exciting to do. We're always trying to stretch ourselves and surprise our audience with what we can do. You know, we don't want people to come in our door and be two steps ahead of us and like, oh, well, I know what to expect from this. And, oh, yes, this is obvious. This is what Timeline would do. We hope to, you know, stay a step ahead of people and stay a step ahead of ourselves.
Well, let's talk about the founding of Timeline, because what you guys have accomplished in a short few years is amazing. The company, you guys are all DePaul people, right?
Yeah, the six of us that started the company all went to the theater school at DePaul.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a bunch of DePaul guys that just decided you were going to have a theater group. And within a couple of years, within a five-year period, you won 31 Jeff citations.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's a little mind-blowing. You know, what's interesting is we all got out of school. Some of us, I was in the undergrad program, and some people like Nick were in the MFA program. And we all got out of school and went our separate ways. We never, while in school, never thought, oh, and we're going to get out and start a theater company and take over the world. Let's go. That was the furthest thing from our mind. We had all worked on a couple projects at school and seemed to complement one another extremely well, but never dreamed of starting a company. And went our separate ways for a year or two. Nick and I worked on a project together. We produced a show together. And after a year or two, we all came back together. Nick was really the one who pulled us back together, because we all felt that we were missing something in the other places we were working around town, mm-hmm. missing, I don't know, the aesthetic that we had together as a group. And I think a lot of it was a point of view. We felt, you know, I was pursuing work as an actor, and I felt like the places I was working, I didn't have a say in the bigger picture, or, you know, didn't really feel like the shows I was working on had much of a point of view. So we came back together, and it was Nick's idea to build a company that focused on history, and one that really had a point of view of connecting the past with the present.
Well, you guys have done that amazing. I mean, from what was the first show was Summit Conference in 98, correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay, then and when you were eligible for Jeff citations in 01, you guys won 7. In 1 year. I believe that ties or sets a record for the Jeff Committee.
It might.
I think it tied the record. Yeah.
It was
7 in 1 year for Not About Nightingales and Streeterville.
Yeah. Yeah. Not About Nightingales was the first show that I think really opened people's eyes to who we are. it was, you know, the newly discovered Tennessee Williams' first play. It had never been done in the Midwest, and we had Bill Brown directing it, who is just one of the greatest talents in Chicago. And for him to come and work with a really small company and to do this show, it opened a lot of people's, you know, eyes to who we were and what our mission was all about. And
well, that's terrific. And then the next year, the Crucible wins 5, and then in 2003, Houtman, that was your first lead actor.
Yes, yeah,
you were tremendous in that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Another role that Nick Bowling sort of pushed me into.
Well, I get you're at a point now where maybe he's going to come up to you and throw a script at you, and you're going to say yes before you grab it.
I know.
Yeah, that's terrific. And then I remember Awake and Sing, and what a great job you did on that.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that won 5. And then Hannah and Martin won 6.
Another favorite of mine, yes.
And then this Happy Breed, which I thought was the best show produced in Chicago last year.
Oh.
I really, a lot of people did.
Thank you.
That won 6.
Thank you, yes.
And then Pravda only won 1, but isn't that I mean, that's incredible. Which means that the theater community is honoring the work you guys do.
It's been overwhelming. It's really been great. I mean, the Jeff Committee has embraced us, and it's really wonderful for a small company. Just helps give great, you know, exposure.
Well, what happens around town when I mention Timeline, they go, oh, yeah, Timeline, we got to put that on our list to go see the show. And then they might ask, by the way, what are they doing?
Right. Oh, that's
see,
nice.
That says a lot,
that's,
yeah.
That's
there
nice.
Are groups that you just go see. And then in the lobby, what you guys do with setting up those posters and with the photos and the history of the show, I mean, the whole lobby is just covered with that.
Yeah, it's a big part of our mission, and we've actually expanded it a lot this year that, you know, our primary focus is not education here. It's producing exciting theater. But we think that if we give the audience tools to learn more about the historical context of the play, that can just enhance the experience. So we've Not About Nightingales was the first show that we did a lobby display that gave people some of this background info, and the audience went nuts for it, and we've been doing it ever since. And now this year we started a subscriber newsletter called Backstory that it takes a lot of that lobby display material and puts it in a take-home format, and then we include interviews with people who work on the production team as well. And
I think people like that, and I think it really enhances, particularly if you're like Hannah and Martin. Tell us a little about that, because that's a couple of characters that no one knew about.
Right.
I remember reading all that before. I came early to do it, and we were elbow to elbow reading it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Martin Heidegger, one of the great philosopher minds, but a Nazi sympathizer. I guess sympathizer isn't even the right word.
Kind of a
participant. Yeah. And then Hannah Arendt, who was one of his students, who he also had a romantic relationship with, who was a Jew, and she also is one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. But the play explored their relationship, and obviously the rift that came between them during World War II with him.
Wasn't that a world premiere?
It was a world premiere, yes. A playwright named Kate Fodor, who is just magnificent. Actually, her latest play is going to be part of the Steppenwolf First Look Festival this summer. A play
yes.
called 100 Saints You Should Know, which is outstanding.
How did you get that play?
I mean, it came to us through Jeremy Cohen, who directed it. Jeremy and I had been talking for, I don't know, over a year about him directing something for us, and I don't know how many scripts we kicked around, dozens and dozens and dozens, and none of them just seemed to pop or be right for that moment. And finally, after so many scripts, he said, you know what, I have a friend in New York. She just wrote this play. I'm going to have her send it to you. And I was like, fine, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll take another one. And Kate sent me the play, and I mean, I'll never forget reading it. I couldn't put it down. I blew through it and contacted the rest of our company members and said, you have to read this week.
Well, you know, for those who didn't see it, I know you actually brought it back. It was so successful.
We did.
I saw it both times, and I'll tell you, I thought it was better the second time only because, you know, the little tweaks,
yeah.
the actors were so strong, and I mean, Parks and Rich
yeah.
were just so good.
But
can you imagine, folks, seeing a play that's full of a lot of philosophy, and I mean, wordy philosophy and existential arguments and,
yeah.
you know, very, very intellectual play, that just you sat there with your mouth open. You were just mesmerized by it, and you followed every word of it.
It was
– It's incredible.
It was so gratifying. It was when we read it, we thought, oh, this is fantastic. We want to do it. But we didn't know that anyone was going to want to see it. I mean, we didn't – you know, we thought, oh, maybe some UFC people will come. We were packed every day, and so I think it really shows the skill of Kate as a writer, because there were so many ways into it. We had philosophy professors and yeah. World War II professors wanting to come see it, who knew everything about Heidegger and Arendt. But then you had people who knew nothing about them and just were fascinated by their love story. And but I tell you, you know, that play and some of these others that
yeah, tell
just,
us about
just
your
mentioned.
favorite plays that you've
done. Oh.
Or the ones you think had the most impact.
Some of the ones that we've already discussed, I mean, Hannah Arendt and This Happy Breed, Not About Nightingales, and Awake and Sing. I would say those are my tops. And what's most gratifying about that is I think all of those plays demand a lot from the audience. And those have been some of our biggest hits, The Crucible as well.
Yes.
These are not plays where you come and check your brain at the door, and you have to really be, you know, bring something to the table as an audience member as well. And it's been so encouraging to see that those are our biggest runaway hits, that there's a large audience out there who wants, you know, wants heady stuff and wants to be challenged.
But you know what you did right on it. You're right. They do want to see it. But many times, quickly, they turn off because it's either boring or yeah. It's just not presented. It says a lot that they're asking a lot. They'll get involved. But you better deliver, and they know you deliver. I mean,
yeah.
This Happy Breed, you also used the video projections so well in that show. But I'll tell you, that show, was there anyone that left that without tears in their eyes?
No, and I saw it countless times, and
yeah.
I was crying like a baby
yeah,
each time. I mean, that's another play, you know, written by Noel Coward, but who the hell knows This Happy Breed? You know, it's hardly ever done. The Shaw Festival did it about 15 years ago, but I don't know of many other productions. I stumbled across it in a Noel Coward anthology, and it's not the Noel Coward people think of. First of all, it's not a comedy. It's not about socialites, you know, dressed to the nines.
It's paying homage to the stiff upper lip of the British middle class.
Absolutely. It's yeah. It's this.
He wrote it during the Blitz, didn't he, or right around?
He wrote
somewhere
it,
in that
yeah,
period.
He wrote it in the late 30s, and it follows, you know, a middle-class family from the end of World War I to the beginning of World War II. So it is epic, and it's broken into 8 or 9 scenes that are dotted across that 20-year period, but that are all tied to major moments in British history. And that's really where Nick Bowling had the idea of adding these short little films between each scene. So, I mean, for one, it helped facilitate that there were massive scene and costume changes because we would skip 7 or 8 years. But a contemporary audience doesn't know what was happening in England in 1923. These films helped really shape the story and just contextualize it. Of what first drew us to the play is that it showed very ordinary people living in extraordinary times and how they adapted with that and fell in love and got married and had you know, sons and daughters die.
You
and
had
leave
yes.
home
you had such great performances in that. Tell us
was,
a few of the.
It was
I know Terry Hamilton.
Outstanding yeah. cast. Terry Hamilton. It was Terry's first show with us. We sort of just discovered him that year, and he's been back many, many times
yes.
since. It was just outstanding. He and Isabel Liss, who played
right.
his wife. There was a cast of probably 12 or 13. It was one of the tightest ensembles it's a year and a half later and they are still an extremely tight group.
Well, let's talk about PJ as a artistic director.
Okay.
Are you the ultimate man that makes the decisions on what plays to pick?
No.
Or how does your process work?
We have 9 company members, and our season selection, I would say, is probably the most democratic thing that we do as an organization. Everyone is extremely involved in reading plays and voting on plays. And if I love a play and the other 8 company members don't, it's not going to be in the season. I may be the squeakiest wheel and will fight really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my job to push and promote projects that I think
are right for us.
And to build relationships with directors and other artists that I think are a good match. But and then to try and sell them to the other company members. But you know, they keep me very honest. We have long and heated discussions about what plays to do and why something is great. You know, there may be an interesting historical play out there, but if it doesn't really connect with what's on the minds or on the lips of people today.
Yeah, can you articulate that? It's hard, the criteria, because I'll tell you, one of the things I think you guys do as a group is you select tremendous plays.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, the main criteria, aside from our mission of that it needs to have a historical focus, is that it really relates to social or political issues of today. And there may be times where we read a play and think, oh, well, this is a fascinating story about a moment of history or a person from history, but I don't really know what the hell it has to do with our lives.
So you want it
right
to
now.
Connect to the audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're going to ask them to think and get involved, you want to make it worthwhile for them.
Absolutely. And in many times we think, oh, it's not right time for this play, and we put it back on the shelf, and then maybe a year later it is. I mean, this Happy Breed is a good example. I first brought it to the company a year prior to when we actually did it, and it just didn't seem to the spark wasn't there for, but the world was a different place a year later, yeah. And we felt that the themes and issues of the play spoke to what was on people's minds.
Well, I like the production you did on Guantanamo, and quite frankly, I hate propaganda pieces. So mm-hmm. I walked in and I said, geez, I hope they're not going to shove propaganda down my throat. And I thought the piece, the way it was presented and the way it was researched, didn't do that. It just presented the story, let the power of the story, the facts.
Well,
and it kind of changed my view. I wasn't aware of a lot of that.
Huh, well, that's nice to hear. It is a fairly one-sided viewpoint that the show is, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I guess in terms of dramatic possibilities, if most of the viewpoints in the show are on the same side, that may hurt dramatic possibilities. But it was so strong in telling those stories and so personal and human that I think that opens people's minds and can provoke discussion.
Mm-hmm. It certainly did. There was a lot of discussion after the day I saw it, and a lot of people's minds were changed. Which shows the power of what theater can do,
yeah.
Presented well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly we've all read countless newspaper articles about Guantanamo, but to really put a human face on it, which we're not seeing in other forms of media, you're not seeing television interviews of family members who, you know, have a loved one being detained there, or guys who've been released. You're not seeing that. And what this play did is it really put a human face on these people. You know, it was all transcripts from actual interviews. So
yeah, I remember reading where somebody said about the play, well, it only showed five people who were innocent, who shouldn't have been detained. And I remember making the comment, five? My God, one or two is a tragedy. Five?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, if it's five, it's 50 or 100.
Yeah, yeah. And another play, The Exonerated, you know, also only looks at a handful of cases, but one case is probably too many.
Correct.
It was very very gratifying to see.
So tell us what's
show.
Coming up. I know a little bit about your new space, and maybe for people who are your core audience, are you going to keep the space on Wellington?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Wellington.
We love this space. Yeah.
I know. As do we. And it's a historic space. It was one of the first off loop. Performance spaces in the late 50s and early 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, there's been a lot of great work in here. So this space will continue to be part of our operation.
But you're moving to a larger. Tell us about that.
Well, not that much larger. Right. We will be moving to the Three Arts Building, which is in the corner of Dearborn and Goethe, but not for a couple of years.
Okay.
And Three Arts Building is a historic landmark building, and they're going to be building a black box theater on the lower level of it, which will become our primary performance space. But until we move there, all of our operations will obviously be here on Wellington. And even once we move, we know that we're going to keep programming alive here.
So you're going to be doing, you'll have more than one production going.
That's quite possible, yes. And I know we'll use the space here in Wellington for other things, for rehearsals and readings and workshops and so on.
Well, that's got to be exciting.
It's very exciting.
Any plans on taking equity contracts and moving up to that level?
I think that probably is in the near future. Yeah, it's not going to be this coming season, but I think it's probably in the near future. But I do see us making that move. You know, we're always trying to increase what we can give our
well,
our
that just
and,
means that on casting that one or two, if you took the minimum contracts, right, there are one or two people you now can't use for
right,
a key role. That
right.
gives you that flexibility.
Right. Right.
What about PJ as an actor now? What besides this triumphant role, which I can't wait to see you in this role, because I know the role and I saw Bosley in it, and when I hear people tell me how great you are in it, it's just going to make fun.
Well, thanks. I'm
and folks, you'll be able to go time. Over to the review when this is posted on our podcast. I will have my review up of the show and the oral review, because first of all, I love the show so much, you know, and I'm fairly forgiving anyhow.
Right.
And I'll take the odds when some of the meanest, toughest critics in town are telling me how great the show is. I got to go with those odds.
That'd be really awesome.
But I'm betting. But what are you going to be doing now coming up?
Taking a little break from the stage, I think, after this. You know, when we started the company, acting was my sole focus. And to be honest, it's all I thought that I wanted to do. And then a couple of years after the company was started, I had the opportunity to fill the role of artistic director. And my focus has changed a lot. And while I still love acting, I really love all other aspects of running the organization as well and being artistic director. So Fiorello has taken a big chunk of my time and energy.
A lot of the dramatic actors don't realize how tough musicals are to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what Fiorello is. I mean,
exactly.
It's a funny show.
Exactly. It's a very, very funny show, yes.
I mean, I remember Politics and Poker,
yeah,
that Hope number, and
Little Tin Box.
Yeah, Little Tin great. Box, and great I Love song. A Cop.
Yeah. There's so many great numbers. So I'm having a blast being on stage now. But I think I'm going to be in our final show of next season, which will be a year from now, which is George Bernard Shaw's first play, another play that many people don't know of called Widower's Houses.
Oh, I don't know that.
Yeah,
great.
It's also very.
You don't know how
rarely
we love
produced.
When you guys pick these plays out. You know, we get so tired of seeing the same 100 plays over and over again.
I know. I don't know when. Shaw Chicago did a reading of Widower's Houses about 5 or 6 years ago, but I don't know of an actual full production that's taken place. But it's a great scathing comedy about gentrification and slumlords and
that's right up
surely
your mission.
Not relevant.
Yeah, right up in your mission. All right, let's give the plug now for Fiorello.
Get
the address, the phone number,
right,
the dates
running,
running
through June 18th. And we run Thursdays and Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 4 and 8, and Sundays at 2. There's information on our website at timelinetheater.com, or our phone number is 773-281-TIME. That's 773-281-8463. And tickets are going fast.
Yeah, what's the ticket price?
$25.
Now, folks, you're going to see a full blast musical for $25. That alone, and serious, and if that's not enough, just bet on the last 5 years, 31 Jeff citations. That should say enough. I mean, you can go see bring your significant other, see the show, and still have dinner, and it would be under the price of some of the downtown shows.
That's like a T-shirt for Wicked.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the program.
let me ask you this. With shows like Fiorello and some of the other tremendous shows you've done, do you guys do any like special matinees or things for like high school students or college students?
We haven't thus far, but we're actually starting an education program in the fall that we will start doing that. Our first show of next season is a play by Richard Nelson called The General from America, which is about Benedict Arnold and George Washington and really the birth of our nation.
Wow.
And it's a great play. And and we're going to start partnering with some Chicago public high schools and bringing students in to see our shows, and then also going into the classroom and talking to them about the themes and issues.
Thank God you're doing that. I know Steppenwolf is doing that, and I've attended with some of the kids, and they're really open to it. Shakespeare's been doing it.
Yeah.
Thank God you guys are doing it because, you know, I go to too many shows and they're all dinosaurs like me there. We got to get the young kids in.
I know.
I think if they find that it's okay to like theater,
yeah,
they're given permission to like it. That's what I like that Steppenwolf and Shakespeare does, and I'm sure you will do. You plan on talking to the kids before the show, right, and
yeah,
kind of
absolutely.
Setting it up
and,
for them?
And, I mean, also showing the kids that it's okay to like history as well and trying to help them realize how historical events do resonate in their lives. And, you know, for the General from America, talking to them about the issues of the play and this man, Benedict Arnold, who betrayed his country and just what that means and how they think that might resonate today with events that are happening now. So it's a window for them into both performing arts and also hopefully generating some more interest.
Well, great. That's a great idea, and we really need that. And I'm sure the history teachers will all, you know, give you a pat on the back for that one. And, well, you have some pretty good research people, too.
Yeah, right? We have amazing dramaturgs who work on our shows, and they're the ones who put together our study guides and our lobby displays and now our backstory research guide. And we post all that stuff on our website as well, so people can read and see some of this info before they come to the show or after.
So what's the website once more?
Timelinetheater.com.
.com. Should go see that and then get your tickets. How do you, with the voice, have you had to do anything special to keep the voice going?
Yeah. It's been a real eye-opener because LaGuardia, if you watch video footage of him or listen to audio footage, he was like the Tasmanian devil. I mean, he was always screaming at the top of his lungs at people.
That's right.
I mean, he just was, you know, he was always beet red and covered with sweat and just in a fury. And so the show is 2 hours and 40 minutes of me just screaming my head off at people, and then I have to stop and sing a few songs. So it's been really challenging to sort of keep.
Well, it's a stretch for you as an actor. I mean,
yeah.
Well, you know, this is not going to be your last musical. You know that.
I wouldn't place any bets. But I, being surrounded by so many great musical theater talents, I'm stealing tips from them every chance I can on how to take care of my voice.
Well, folks, just by the look on PJ's face, trust me on this one, he's really having fun doing this show.
I am.
Well, PJ, I really, really appreciate you spending the time to do this interview.
Thanks, it's been a pleasure.
And because I've been trying to get you on for a while and get timeline because, you know, I'm trying to spread it around and do interviews with a big mixture. And I had to get the number one theater group. And thank God you fulfilled one of our dreams. We've been hoping for this show for a long time.
Oh, that's great.
And thank you very much.
That's great. Thanks, Ivan. Thank you.
One last question.
Yeah.
What would you quickly say to a young theater group who wants to start up?
I would say this is a town where you can do it. And if you are really passionate, go for it. When I started telling people that, you know, I was part of starting a company way back in 1997, you know, a lot of people sort of rolled their eyes and snickered and thought, oh, great, this is what Chicago needs is another theater company. But we stayed true to ourselves, and we thought that we had something different and unique, and we had a point of view that we wanted to put across, and we've stuck to that, and here we're going to be entering year 10. So, you know, anyone who wants to do it, I will be the last person to snicker and roll my eyes and say, great, go for it.
Good words of wisdom.
Yeah.
And I might add, surround yourself with a bunch of talented people who can
that
work
helps
together.
Too.
Yes. Thank you, PJ, so much. And make sure you folks get to see the show because I think this is going to be one of the top shows of the year. Thank you. And we'll talk to you next time.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this exceptional episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, you know the drill, everybody. It's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote concerns nobility, and it comes from Henry IV, Part 2, Act 4, Scene 1. True nobility is exempt from fear. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.